First case on our calendar is 08304 and 403, Safeco Insurance Company versus Federal Insurance Company and Pacific Indemnity Company. Mr. Nordstrom.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, watch your time there.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Chris Nordstrom. I represent Appellant Safeco Insurance Company of America in this particular case. In the memorandum in support of jurisdiction, I identified the issues in this case as the next step in the guidance of this court after this court's decision in Doe versus Schaefer. But this case is not about changing Doe versus Schaefer. It is not about what risks can be insured. It is about what risks are insured based on language in a contract. As the 11th District recently said in Westfield versus Porcervina, it is important to note that in Doe, the Supreme Court only held that it did not violate public policy to provide insurance coverage for negligence related to sexual molestation. It did not hold that every insurance policy necessarily provided such coverage. The policies issued by Safeco Insurance Company in this case did not provide such coverage. They declined to provide that coverage using language suggested in a decision referenced favorably by this court in Doe called Silverball Amusement versus Utah Home Fire Insurance Company. Silverball involved a policy which contained a separation of insureds provision. Silverball also involved the applicability of exclusions which referenced the insured in contrast to an insured or any insured. The Silverball court stated, the separation of insureds provision in Utah Home's policy means that the acts of the insured are viewed independently of the acts of additional insureds. If Utah Home had wished to exclude coverage for all claims arising from all intentional acts, regardless of who committed them, it could easily have drafted its policy to exclude coverage from the intentional act, arising from the intentional act of any insured.
Counsel, you're suggesting here, and I'm wondering, is that the case, that the language of the Safeco policy is unique to Ohio?
Is the language of the Safeco policy is not unique to Ohio.
It's a universal language.
I believe that
contained in their policies nationwide.
I believe that the policy that was issued includes language which is present in other jurisdictions. Now, I note that the coverage form in this case was an Ohio coverage form.
If it's universal language used company-wide, then it would be doubtful that it was crafted specifically to conform to a particular case of this court.
Well, I would agree with you, Your Honor. It would not have been specifically tailored to exclude or preclude
but
or
I,
include
I thought that I thought that's what you suggested in your argument, is that this language was drafted to tailor it to a particular Ohio case.
Well, Your Honor, this particular case involves policy language which mirrors that language present in the Silverball decision, which tells from this court, which tells carriers, how do you exclude all claims for the actions of any insured under the policy?
Okay.
Safeco included just this type of language in its policy because it wanted to exclude coverage for all claims arising out of all intentional or criminal acts. And the language accomplishes that, it discloses that information to the insured. Safeco's homeowner's policy excludes liability excludes, among other things, liability arising out of any illegal act committed by or at the direction of an insured. Safeco's umbrella policy excludes any injury caused by violation of a penal law or ordinance committed by any insured. And this is something I suspect that the appellees will discuss. Safeco's policies both have a general separation of insureds provision, But that provision does not make the above exclusions and some others, these are examples, but there are other exclusions, does not make those exclusions ambiguous. So your question is probably, well, why is it there? And that seems to be the critical focus of the briefing on the other side of this case. The answer is that the general separation of insureds provision in the Safeco policies is used to ensure the exclusions present in the Safeco policies, which refer to the insured, are viewed independently of the acts of additional insureds. And there are exclusions present in the Safeco policy which reference the insured. They don't pertain to this particular case. It's not the criminal acts exclusion. It's not the intentional acts exclusion. But there are exclusions present in both policies, both Safeco policies, which contain the general separation of insureds provision, which use the insured language. Safeco's policies both have provisions which reference the insured. This is entirely consistent with the history of the separation of insureds provision. And the separation of insureds provision was introduced in the 1950s because courts were having difficulty applying the applying situations where there were multiple insureds, and the policy referenced insured. In the early days, that there wasn't actually a modifying article. Sometimes it would be just insured. Other times it would say the insured.
Wouldn't it be more clear if it had said any insured?
Well, the policies, when the separation of insureds provision, the general separation of insureds provision was incorporated into the policies, policies were not referencing an or any insured. They just said insured or the insured. And there was confusion in the courts based on that.
We've got a lot of cases that distinguish between the insured, an insured, and any insured.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I would
we have to really figure out what an means, whether it means the or any.
Well, right, and I would agree with that, and I think that the case law clearly draws a distinction between language that include the language the insured, a definite article, and or any insured. And means any, and there are cases cited in the briefs that address that particular issue.
It's been interpreted the other way, however.
That is correct. It's been incorrectly interpreted in a different way. And my position here is not that there are no cases from other jurisdictions which resolve this issue in a different fashion than that advocated by Safeco. That is not the position of Safeco. What Safeco does advocate is there is a right and a wrong answer to this particular question, and based on the history of the provision and the language of the provision, there is no ambiguity created in a policy by virtue of the existence of a general separation of insureds provision.
And ambiguity is determined in the eye of whom?
Ambiguity in a policy is determined by you.
Yes. So the courts don't find, I mean, we don't look at this by what the policyholder might be able to understand from reading the policy. It's simply what the Supreme Court of Ohio looks at.
Ladies and gentlemen, you determine whether this policy is ambiguous, and if it is then ambiguous, then you would apply the various presumptions associated with whether, an insured's.
But your view is there is no ambiguity at all.
That's correct, and that's consistent with numerous decisions, both of other jurisdictions, and it's also consistent with the history, as I've just mentioned. It's consistent with the determinations made by treatise writer Wint in his recent treatise, Insurance Claims and Disputes, in which he determined that he recognized that there are courts that have reached an opposite conclusion, but he specifically states that the holding is not justifiable. It is not justifiable to find ambiguity in a policy which has any insured language in an exclusion which has any insured language in it, in the presence of a general separation of insurance provision or severability provision. And the case that is that runs contrary to the first district's decision in this one, United Ohio Insurance Company versus Metzger, is exactly on point. The third district determined in that case that a general separation of insurance provision did not create ambiguity with respect to, and this goes back to what you were mentioning, Justice O'Donnell, and does not create ambiguity in an exclusion which references an insured. It wasn't an any insured one. It wasn't an any insured situation, but any has been, any is one extreme, and is being placed closer to that extreme. And in this particular situation, Metzger addressed the and language. Other decisions that have been referenced in the opposing briefing include Buckeye Union versus Phillips, which is a case decided also by the Third District back in 1986. It is important to reference in that particular situation that in Phillips there was a jury determination that there were no intentional acts committed associated with the policy. There was a question addressed to a jury. The jury said no intentional acts. Also, Havel versus Chapek, which is a decision from the 11th District Court of Appeals in 2006, it was a decision which included a dissent, but the most significant aspect of that decision, and the reason, just like in Phillips, why it's not useful for this court in evaluating how lower courts certainly have correctly resolved this issue, is because there was a determination by the court in Chapek that, as a matter of law, there was no negligence claim against, there was no valid negligence claim against the parents. They did not have a valid negligence claim. In addition, another case that is relevant to this court's evaluation, and I would direct the court to it, is the Illinois Union versus Shefchuk decision. And what this case is from, it's a Sixth Circuit decision from 2002, and what it does is it directs the court's attention to the fact that different language means different outcomes. In Shefchuk, the language was, we will cover, this is the specific separation of insureds provision, said, we will cover each insured just as if a separate policy had been issued to each. And under those contexts, an or any, the indefinite modification would not have specifically been able to exclude coverage.
Mr. Nordstrom, you don't have a whole lot of time left. That, for me, the more difficult question, frankly, in this case is the occurrence, negligence, incurrence question, how we interpret the term occurrence. Let me hear your strongest argument on that issue.
Well, occurrence is defined as an accident in the policies, and the conduct of the claimants in this case was not an accident. It was determined under the Houston versus Connesesny logic that there were foreseeable injury as a result of the conduct of the parents in relation to Ben White here, and therefore it wasn't an accident. But this court has not clarified the history related to that issue as set forth in the Gearing case and then other cases as it proceeded up to Doe, since Doe did not involve a case where the intentional actor was also an insured under the policy.
Well, counsel, what was the jury determination in that regard? You said it was, I assume there were interrogatories regarding.
The jury determined that there was negligent supervision or negligent entrustment in this particular case.
That's what I thought.
That's correct.
And that would not come within the definition of accident.
The theory that they would proceed under is the law as stated in Houston versus Connesesny requires foreseeability of injury.
I want to follow up on that. The issue we have here, is it not, that the claim is against the parents for not supervising the child properly, and that is alleged to be a negligent act, is that correct?
That's correct.
And the argument is that negligent act of failure to supervise the child caused the injury to the victim?
Your Honor, it actually didn't cause the injury to the victim. What caused the injury to the victim was the stabbing.
That's
and it's derivative. All of the
concentrate on that issue. I think to me that's the important issue here.
Absent the stabbing by absent Ben White's stabbing of Casey Hilmer, there are no derivative negligence claims that can be pursued against the parents. And I'm out of time, Your Honor. Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Nordstrom. Mr. Rizzi.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, I'm Rich Rizzi. I'm appearing on behalf of Appellees Federal Insurance Company and Pacific Indemnity Company. I believe the issue here is whether negligent insureds will be afforded coverage where one insured commits an intentional act. Back in Doe versus Schaefer, this court stated, the average person would no doubt find such coverage to be the purpose for which he obtained insurance. Here there are two clauses, the separation of insureds clause and the intentional acts exclusion. The history of the separation of insureds clause is clear. It was created to alleviate the very argument that Safeco is making to this court. It was before the 1950s, courts were interpreting the intentional acts exclusion to apply to all insureds. That was not the insurance company's intent, and they added the separation of insureds clause accordingly to make that clear. Then, years later, some insurers, my clients have the same policy language or substantially identical to Safeco. Some insurers changed it to an or any and then said, well, that trumps the separation of insureds clause, which was added to make sure that each insured was afforded coverage separately. We believe that creates an inherent ambiguity in the policy. There are many ways to alleviate that ambiguity, referring to saying, for instance, something along the lines of, if you or any person insured under this policy, we will not pay you or any other insured. If any insured commits an intentional act, then coverage is excluded for all insureds. Or simply remove the severability of insurance condition. And there are actually three lines of case law in Ohio that we outlined in our brief. We believe that there, aside from Metzger, which is an older decision, we believe there are three lines of relatively clear case law in Ohio. One dealing with an or any insured in relative to an intentional act, and a containing a severability of insurance clause where coverage is found, and then two other lines of case law, one containing an insured or any insured, no severability of insurance clause. In that case, no coverage is found. And then the third possibility containing a joint obligations clause, such as the clauses I've mentioned in the various cases discussed in our brief, in which no coverage is found. So there certainly are ways for an insurance company to make this clear. I would like to briefly address or go back to what Justice Moyer was mentioning earlier in terms of the occurrence language. We believe, of course, Benjamin White was found to have committed an intentional act, but his parents were found to have committed solely negligent acts by the jury. That's at supplement 158 to 159. The jury interrogatories are in there for the court's review. We believe that is a separate act. It is what, as this court said in Doe and then later reaffirmed in auto owners, that is why people purchase insurance coverage, to cover their own negligence, even if another insured commits an intentional act.
Mr. Rizzi, how do you reconcile that statement with the Court of Appeals conclusion saying that when an insurance policy defines an occurrence as an accident, that definition will include allegations of negligence even when the negligence relates to the failure to prevent intentional conduct? it almost seems as though the court is saying that the occurrence language puts everything together, and you're talking about a single cause of action as opposed to two, one for intentional conduct and then one for negligent conduct.
I think the issue is from whose standpoint the act is viewed. The Safeco policy actually doesn't contain language that specifically states that, so it should be interpreted in favor of the policyholder. Therefore, it should be interpreted in favor of the Whites, and the actions of the parents should be viewed from their own standpoint. And there was no finding, of course, that they intended any of this.
So is it truly that the ambiguity or confusion in the policy, as you're suggesting, leads to the judgment in your favor? I mean, is that really what we're talking about, that there's the ambiguity here that needs to be construed in favor of the policyholder? Is that the strongest argument you have?
Well, there are two separate issues, one whether or not it's an occurrence, and one whether or not the exclusion applies. The issue of whether or not it's an occurrence is whether or not it's an accident from the standpoint of the insured. And here, the parents' actions or inactions, whatever, were found to be only negligent and were an accident from their standpoint. Then comes the issue, Safeco's argument, that regardless of the occurrence language, even though it may be an occurrence, the coverage is excluded because coverage is excluded for the intentional acts of any insured. And the problem with the difference between and, any, and the is that they're inherently ambiguous. Any one of the insureds, the intentional acts of any one of the insureds are excluded. The intentional acts of an insured are excluded. The intentional acts of the insured are excluded. It's not clear whether it applies to the one insured who commits the intentional act or to all the insureds under the policy.
What, you know, why doesn't it apply to any of the insureds? An insured is, to me, just common language would mean that if you are insured, you are an insured. And so you're covered. Your act is covered.
Absolutely. I mean,
what's ambiguous about that?
The ambiguity comes in when, as Safeco argues, that is applied to not the insured that committed the intentional act, but to the insureds who committed negligent acts.
Yeah, but that's not an ambiguity about the word "and." It's an ambiguity about the fact we have a alleged negligent act conduct by the parents and an intentional act by, as you started out with it, by Ben. Let me ask you, is every negligent act an accident?
I can't think of any that would not be. I can't think of any that would not be at this point. There may be some out there, but I would think that unless it's intentional.
Counsel, let me give you one that I just think of. All these folks in New York City, they were negligent in their supervision of their banks. The way they did it, they intended to do it that way.
And that goes back to...
I mean, they made conscious decisions to do things and not do certain things.
That is true, Your Honor. And I think that goes back to
But it may jump over to fraud as well. So, I mean, you're splitting
errors. I don't know that that's necessary. I believe that if one is intending to commit fraud, that would be an intentional act. If one was not intending to commit fraud and simply committed acts that resulted in something that was unintended, the Swanson versus Kidd case, for example. The question is whether the results are intended or just the act. I mean, every act is intended. Every car accident could be construed an intentional act, I suppose, because someone intentionally, unless someone was passed out, of course, intentionally acted to cause the result, even though...
That's an interesting theory. I have never heard that. Every negligent act is an intentional act, essentially.
Well, it could be, because every action is, by definition, intentional, or should be.
Acting, they're using some volition in doing what they're doing, conducting themselves, and so...
But here you have omission, or here you have failure to act, if you look at the negligent supervision.
Correct. And it's viewed from the standpoint, it should be viewed from the standpoint of the insured. And the issue from the standpoint of the insured should be, did they intend this result? Did they intend to have this admittedly horrible result and to negligently supervise or to not supervise their child? There's no evidence of that. The evidence is that they were negligent. They made a mistake. They may have, like someone driving a car, made a mistake while they were driving a car. It was an intentional mistake. They didn't see the other driver, but it's still an accident. It's still an occurrence under the policy.
But then opposing counsel would say, but if that led to an intentional act by an insured, meaning any insured, you would be excluded from coverage. I mean, that's their position, correct?
That is their position. That is their position. And our position in response is the severability and insurance clause was specifically added to make sure that the policy was interpreted from the standpoint of each insured. That's why it was added back in the 50s.
Counsel, is
yes, Your Honor.
Insurance contract language, does the language of insurance contracts normally employ the term accident as a proxy for any type of negligence?
Yes.
So this is a common terminology when it's designed to cover negligent conduct.
Yes, Your Honor. Generally, there's, under an insurance policy, I don't know that I've seen the word negligence used. Usually it's referred to as an accident, which is generally the dichotomy between an accidental act and an intentional act. An intentional act being excluded because the insured intends the result, which makes it, frankly, it's an underwriting issue, makes it impossible to predict because the insured could go out and commit an intentional act and the insurance companies don't want to cover that.
Counsel, I'd like to ask you another question. In terms of the litigation on this particular question has been going on now for decades, apparently.
Yes, Your Honor.
Which, of course, leads to one wondering why insurance companies don't tighten up or clarify this language to avoid such litigation. And you, in fact, in your brief at page 12 in the footnote, cite language which is very clear.
Yes, sir.
And as we're looking at the question of whether or not this is an ambiguity or not, why is it that this language, which is susceptible to several interpretations and courts have held both ways, continue? Why doesn't it get cleaned up?
I think Your Honor makes an excellent point. The fact that my client has virtually identical language and interprets it to provide coverage, I think highlights the fact that very intelligent, very sophisticated entities and courts nationwide have disagreed. The insurance companies themselves disagree whether or not coverage is provided.
And we're here splitting hairs, or you're here splitting hairs, over this language. And then you have, think about your normal insured, asks for coverage, and they're supposed to sort of figure out what this means. I mean, we're really asking them to do a lot more than just really within the capability or the expectation of most insureds.
I think Your Honor is exactly right. And I think that, as this court recognized in Doe, this is the coverage that most insureds would expect. And reading the two policy provisions, I think most insureds, most people would probably interpret it in favor of coverage and say, yes, this would be covered because this policy applies separately to me. Safeco's argument is by changing the to an or any in one tiny exclusion. The insured is supposed to realize that that excludes coverage. I think reading that with the severability of insurance clause, it's absolutely ambiguous. And in this court's decision in Olmstead almost 80 years ago, this court recognized that a dispute between many jurisdictions indicates ambiguity. As this court said, the question whether such a clause is ambiguous ceases to be an open one. Paragraph 1 of the syllabus in Olmstead. This court also said, this is especially applicable to contracts executed subsequent to such conflicting judicial constructions. Here we have cases going back in many Supreme Courts on these issues, and I believe my time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Nordstrom, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
I would note that the language that's present in the Safeco policies didn't get changed in these policies. It wasn't a change that occurred in the policies. It's present in the policies where it says, "an insured if any insured commits an intentional act, if any insured commits a criminal act, coverage is excluded." That's what the exclusions say, and a reasonable individual reviewing that would understand that they. That coverage is not provided in that situation. The issue of the of occurrence, the occurrence here, if there was an occurrence, it would be derivative of the intentional acts. Absent Ben White stabbing Casey Hilmer, there would be no coverage. I mean, there would have been no harm. There would have been no claim. There would have been none of the aspects of this case that are the subject of this dispute. And
well, you could read that another way too, couldn't you? Absent the negligent supervision, there would have been no stabbing. I mean, why isn't that a reasonable interpretation?
Well, the stabbing occurred regardless of the relationship of the supervision. I mean, the supervision was not. Was not demonstrated to have been in relation to preventing the stabbing. I mean, that the stabbing came first.
And the negligent supervision came later?
Well, the actual harm created by the stabbing came first, and the harm associated with the negligent supervision or entrustment occurred simultaneously with it.
You're emphasizing the occurrence itself and then looking to see if it was intentional or not intentional, as opposed to looking at the coverage of each insured and deciding if their acts were intentional or not intentional.
Well, I think you would look, I'm sorry, were you finished?
No, I'm just trying to look at it a different way to see if I understand what you're saying.
I'm saying that the exclusions ask you to evaluate the conduct of all the insureds under the policy, and Ben White, I mean, he attempted to murder Casey Hilmer. He committed excluded conduct under this policy, and by virtue of that, the policy says that any insured under that policy and insured under that policy, there's no coverage for those individuals.
So the coverage of the insured's coverage is not considered separately, is what I'm saying, in terms of whether each insured's conduct was intentional or not intentional.
Well, the insured's conduct is evaluated separately, but the intentional or criminal conduct of another insured under the policy, what the policy says is that conduct can preclude coverage for all the insureds.
So,
and that's
intentional conduct by one insured can exclude all insureds from coverage.
That's correct.
But that really doesn't square with Doe, does it?
Well, Doe is a public policy-based decision, which said.
Well, really, this is going to be a public policy-based decision in this case, isn't it?
Well, the holding in Doe was about what had previously been determined by this court to be an issue that didn't actually involve contract interpretation. This court was saying, we don't even need to look at the contracts because these type of acts.
He had an act of molestation, and there are others who didn't participate in that, and as a public policy, we may insure them. That's what the court said in Doe.
Well, the court changed the law from a situation where those individuals, as a matter of law, they didn't have any coverage, to a situation where they could be covered. But this case focuses on what the language actually says and means and requires what the policyholders who are claiming coverage here, what their policies exclude or don't exclude. And so the situation has moved from pre-Doe, it wasn't important to look at what the policy said, as the court's precedent had established. It was simply what kind of act was it? Was it sexual molestation? If it was a sexual molestation, there was no coverage for anything associated with it. Then there was the court extended that to situations where involving murder, intentional, a very serious intentional presumed harm crime. And Doe was a step back from that in saying you can have coverage for these situations, and Safeco's not arguing that you can never have coverage for these situations. Safeco's position is our policies don't provide that coverage, and it's clear from the policies that they don't. And this court, the fact that other courts have determined that there's ambiguity in other jurisdictions is not determinant. I mean, this court's review, and I cite the cases in my brief, this court's review is de novo. It's up to you, Your Honors, to make this determination. You don't defer to what a court in Kansas says about whether this is ambiguous or not.
If we look at that severability clause as three separate policies as to each of the insureds, or two, the parents and the child actor, then we may get two different results. You want it to be a unified severability clause applicable to an insured, which you interpret as any insured, as opposed to the insured.
Well, one Safeco policy actually says any insured. It uses any. The other one, the homeowner says an. But the answer, Your Honor, the answer to your question is if this separation of insureds provision said this policy will be applied as if a separate policy exists for each insured, then that's a different outcome. That's the Shefchuk decision, and the position, Safeco's position isn't that Shefchuk is wrongly decided. Safeco's position is that Shefchuk involved different language. It did not involve a general severability of insureds provision, and we've explained, the history explains what a general severability of insureds provision means.
Thank you.
Mr. Norton, let me just ask you, we've talked about Doe. I'd like to read a passage from page 393 of Doe and see how you think we can distinguish it, other than on the facts, from this case. We're talking about, the court explained that a contrary practice would be unreasonable, meaning the practice for which you're arguing here. The ultimate effect of those opinions denying coverage leads to a metamorphosis in which certain negligent actions are transformed by the court into intentional actions for the purpose of deciding negligent hiring cases involving sexual abuse. Such a decision effectively dissolves the distinction between intentional and negligent conduct, allowing the intentional act to devour the negligent act for the purpose of determining coverage. The correct method, and then we go on to say the correct method is to consider each act independently or separately, each act of the insured separately. How would we distinguish that language from this case?
Well, the Doe decision relies on Silverball. I mean, it says you said the Silverball, we follow the rationale of Silverball. Silverball involved a case, involved a policy. It was a discussion specifically of policy language, not public policy issues to the exclusion of policy language. The policies there said the insured. I mean, all of those policies in Silverball had the language that Safeco acknowledges, and this seems to be uniform at this point. It wasn't in the 50s, but uniformly determined to mean that you focus just on the conduct of the individual seeking coverage, and not, when it says the insured, not on the conduct of any other insureds under the policy. But the distinction in that situation is that the statements that are being made by the court, by this court in Doe, are based entirely on language which is not present in the Silverball decision, language that is not present in the Safeco policies, in the relevant exclusions. As I've mentioned, the Safeco policies have the separation of insureds provision in them because when there is the insured language in the exclusion, it's to be applied in a particular way. And Safeco's policies have the insured language, just not in exclusions that are at issue in this particular setting. So the application of Doe to the facts of this case, it's not a situation where Doe has to be distinguished or Doe, the rationale that Doe uses in following Silverball supports making a determination that Safeco does not owe coverage here, because Doe says Silverball is a good way to look at this, and Silverball says if you want to exclude coverage for any insured, this is that's how you do it. You say an or any insured. You say any insured. But our argument is it's the same.
Thank you. You've used your time. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.